From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of April, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear from last night's presidential speech to Congress. Joe Biden talked about the farm at least once in rural America as well, along with trade with China. We'll take all of those issues up in a new segment about that speech. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast and put some context to the dry conditions on the ground in the Safrinha crop growing areas of Brazil. We'll do that with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled 15 and three quarters of a cent higher at $7.02. July at 6.48 and a quarter a bushel, up 4 1/4. And December new crop down a quarter at $5.46 1/4. May soybeans $15.42 1/2, down 15 1/4. July 11 1/2 lower at $15.02 2/4 per bushel. And bean meal futures up $1.30. Bean oil $2.96 lower for the day. Wheat futures soft red in the July at 7.29, up 6 1/4 cents, and the hard red July down 2 at $6.94. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract 50 cents higher. Feeders were up 60 cents and hogs were down 2.55 for the day. Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to discuss the trade in Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We've had a little pause last week because of the cold, and as of recent, some rainfall. Have you been in the field much over the last week?
Yeah, actually, we finished up on Monday. We had a pretty good pace here over the last couple of weeks. Of course, we did have some cool weather, but we missed most of the rain events. We finally got some rain last night. Between yesterday and overnight, we actually had about an inch of rain, but it never rained hard, so we really couldn't complain about that too much. But yeah, we got along really well, and we went ahead and finished up.
Did that give you any pause to look at the futures markets, especially for new crop, corn or soybeans, and to add to positions?
You know, I think once we get up and everything's up and going and looking good, then I think that we'll probably go ahead and add. Definitely this week, you know, whenever we ran a little bit higher earlier in the week, pushing on some 550 fall delivery type prices. Those to me looked awfully attractive, you know, and then getting November beans safely above $13 fall delivery there earlier in the week, same type of thing. And so we did witness a few producers sign step forward. You know, I already felt like I had enough sold at the time to maybe go ahead and be patient on future sales, especially as dry as what it's been. I mean, it's just been brutally dry for most of us in the Corn Belt. And I think it's something we need to be paying pretty close attention to.
Yeah, not only dry here, but dry in South America in the Safrinha or second crop growing regions. I'm wondering if that's all built into the marketplace at this point, or whether there's more to come potentially from there.
Well, you know, when you came in here this morning on Thursday, and basically most of your forecasts are saying, hey, we're not going to see any relief in the next 10 days to 2 weeks here for the bulk of the Safrinha crop. And yet the corn market basically wasn't doing much. I mean, obviously we had some gyrations back and forth. It's been volatile all week, but we weren't sharply higher. That tells you, you know, that a lot of these traders understand that crop's hurt and it's probably going to be hurt. But at the same time, maybe they feel like we've gone up enough for now. I mean, you know, you close the day here on Thursday with May corn above the $7 level. So it's something that you realize we've already rallied quite a bit. And I think whenever it gets right down to it, U.S. weather I talked about before has very little to do with the current rally. I mean, it's got probably a huge chunk of the majority you would definitely want to pin on what's happened in South America, because this Safrinha crop going downhill has certainly been a really bullish influence.
Coming back here to the United States, my discussions during this week with those in Iowa suggest they've been moving very quickly, maybe 90% done in some areas. You, of course, finished up earlier in the week. Lots of folks have been rolling. What do you expect next Monday to see on the weekly crop progress report? And does it put very much pressure on futures?
I think next Monday's report will definitely show that we're ahead of pace. I think you're going to see, especially in the I states, there's going to be some areas that are going to be done. There's going to be some areas that are going to be really far along. And so I think that you'll probably have some headwinds, if you will. Now, obviously, you got to get the crop up and you got to get it going. But whenever you get planted early, the trade generally assumes that it gives you the chance to have trend line or above yields. And a lot of times when you plant early, you pick up even more acres. And I know that's going to be the big question moving forward is, what kind of total acreage are we looking at? Yeah, you might put some pressure on the market, but at the same time, that report the following week for the May WASDE is going to be looming. And I don't think a lot of folks are going to want to go into that report excessively short.
Many, as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, have been worried about dryness, especially in the northwestern Corn Belt, even just the western Corn Belt in general. Parts of Illinois were very dry early on. Much of that has been abated. However, it remains in the back of the minds of producers, and I'm not sure they're convinced that there's enough soil moisture yet for them to feel satisfied that this crop will get off to a long good start. A short good start, probably. What are you watching?
Well, for me, whenever you look at this this weather, it's concerning. I mean, most of the producers you talk to will tell you it's the best that their ground's worked since you fill in the gap, but it's 2012. I mean, it's the year that a lot of folks are talking about. It was a little bit warmer in 2012. I mean, most of us were farming with our t-shirts on there in early April. But at the same time, we were also in the situation where every piece of ground was working like a garden. We've seen that in a good chunk, the Corn Belt here this spring. And so a lot of that has to do with the lack of absolute moisture. Now, I'm watching very closely just to see, what's going to happen in the western Corn Belt. So I talked to a couple of prominent forecasters this week. And they felt like as dry as what it is in the Rocky Mountains, that there's no question that you're looking at the potential that the Western Corn Belt could come up short this year. So if we have any weather issues whatsoever, I think that you could take these markets on up. I don't think you make new highs unless you get U.S. summer weather issues personally, without some sort of a bullish surprise maybe there in the June planted acreage report. But I think you're going to need some weather. I mean, otherwise, I do think that you're probably going to chop around, not going to see a whole lot of weakness, because it's just such a tight situation that I think you're going to find out there in the May report that these carryout levels and stocks-to-use ratios are going to be razor thin.
When you get to the June report, it'll be about acreage and grain stocks. They'll both be out at the same time. Of course, we have a May and a June WASDE prior to then. But those reports could be really substantial as it relates to what happens in the marketplace, given what, if anything, is happening in the weather. Do they concern you?
The May report, for me, I struggle. You might be able, I struggle to find a way that you're going to have a bearish report. Now, maybe it's going to be bearish versus expectations, but whenever you take the acreage levels and you plug them into your new crop balance sheets, the acreage levels for March planting intentions is what you have to use. Those are both very small numbers for both corn and beans. And quite frankly, 87.6 on soybeans, just using the baseline numbers for demand, that leaves you with literally no beans unless you get well above a 50 bushel yield. And so I think for both corn and beans, you're looking at a very tight stock situation, a very tight stocks to use situation. And I think that you need to be to have been able to see this huge rally that we've been able to benefit from, this spring. That's going to have to have bought some acres. If we didn't buy a decent amount of acres, and I'm not totally sure where they're all going to come from, but if we didn't buy a decent amount of acres, then I think you're still looking at a very supportive situation because you'd have to have just some absolute monster yields to be able to get above, for instance, a 1.5 carryout on corn and maybe get up above a 250, 300 carryout on beans.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Well, last night, the President of the United States addressed a joint meeting of Congress. In the address, President Joe Biden referenced rural America a couple of times and farmers directly once. The first reference was related to the American Jobs Act and bringing high-speed internet to the rural areas of the nation.
It creates jobs connecting every American with high-speed internet, including 35% of the rural America that still doesn't have it. This is going to help our kids and our businesses succeed in the 21st century economy.
Bringing high-speed internet into rural areas has been on the presidential agendas for some time, including through the Obama and Trump eras. President Biden told the gathered senators and representatives that he expects Kamala Harris, his vice president, to lead the effort to usher the American Jobs Plan through Congress.
And I'm asking the vice president to lead this effort, if she would, because I know it'll get done. Creates jobs, building a modern power grid. Our grids are vulnerable to storms, hacks, catastrophic failures, with tragic results, as we saw in Texas and elsewhere during the winter storms. The American Jobs Plan will create jobs that lay thousands of miles of transmission lines needed to build a resilient and fully clean grid.
Updating the electrical grid is just one of many goals of the American Jobs Plan that President Biden pitched last night. Competing on the world stage is another goal, and that starts with electric cars. It's important to note the placement of farmers in this part of the speech.
For too long, we've failed to use the most important word when it comes to meeting the climate crisis: jobs. 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 For me, when I think climate change, I think jobs. The American Jobs Plan will put engineers and construction workers to work building more energy-efficient buildings and homes. Electrical workers, IBEW members, installing 500,000 charging stations along our highways so we can own the electric car market. Farmers planting cover crops so they can reduce the carbon dioxide in the air and get paid for doing it.
So the president mentioned cover crops, particularly as part of carbon sequestration going forward. He did not mention renewable fuels, ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel in any context. However, the administration is seen to be in support of the current standards through the RFS, but not particularly of increasing renewable fuels usage across the nation beyond the current standards. At the end of the speech, he turned his attention to foreign affairs, in particular competition with China.
We can't be so busy competing with one another that we forget the competition that we have with the rest of the world to win the 21st century. Secretary Blinken can tell you, I spent a lot of time with President Xi, traveled over 17,000 miles with him, spent, they tell me, over 24 hours in private discussions with him. When he called to congratulate him, we had a two-hour discussion. He's deadly earnest about becoming the most significant, consequential nation in the world. He and others, autocrats, think that democracy can't compete in the 21st century with autocracies, because it takes too long to get consensus. To win that competition for the future, in my view, we also need to make a once-in-a-generation investment in our families and our children.
That investment, the President's American Jobs Plan Act, is considered far too expensive by the Republican side of the aisle. They put forth their own infrastructure spending plan, and Congress will try to work out details over the coming months. For his part, the president says the domestic plan is his foreign policy as it relates to China.
The investments I propose tonight also advance the foreign policy, in my view, that benefits the middle class. That means making sure every nation plays by the same rules in the global economy, including China. In my discussion with President Xi, I told him, we welcome the competition. We're not looking for conflict, but I made absolutely clear that we will defend America's interest across the board. America will stand up to unfair trade practices that undercut American workers and American industries, like subsidies from state to state-owned operations and enterprises, and the theft of American technology and intellectual property.
Those two items are very similar to the trade policies that President Donald Trump put into place, with some twist. President Joe Biden will work for the rest of the year to try to convince the U.S. Congress that passing the Biden American Jobs Plan should be done. There is likely to be a great deal of give and take as Republicans and Democrats set about the task. Mike Tenora is now here to take a look at the weather forecast with us. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being here.
Hey, great being here, Todd.
Let's begin in South America. I think this is the story we'll want to stick with for most of our discussion. How do you see things developing in Brazil as it's related to safrinha or second crop corn?
Well, it's going extremely poorly in the southern growing areas. We have proprietary data that we share with all of our clients on occasion, and we've been pointing this out for a while. But essentially, a very large proportion of that crop is extremely dry. In fact, 43% of expected corn production, and we're just talking about second corn crop production only, 43% of that crop had less than one-fourth of its normal rainfall over the last 30 days. And that's comprised of 90% from the southern region and a much smaller percentage in the northern region. But so it's primarily being driven by what's taking place in Paraná, Sao Paulo, and Mato Grosso do Sul.
And that crop is far less mature than the crop in the more northern regions as well.
Well, that's exactly right. It's not a huge difference, but it was planted about 2 weeks later than the corn that's up to the north. And I don't want to say the corn to the north is looking all fantastic. It has its own problems too, but the southern areas is where it's the worst. And basically, today is just about the 51st day since half of that crop was planted. So essentially, it's week 7 of the growing season, and depending on how you'd like to look at it. So if we think of that in U.S. terms, let's say we're half planted on May 15th, there, and then we go out 50 days or so. That puts us 7 weeks into the future. We're essentially looking at the middle of July, all else equal, in the same type of terms.
Yeah, so it's not quite yet, most of it anyway, not quite yet to the point where it will be in the middle of pollination, but coming soon. It's going to need rainfall for that. And I'm sure you've been thinking about just total number of inches or centimeters of rainfall they've had and what you need to put a crop together. And what kinds of concerns are there going forward? And I suppose in this case, I really want to know whether it will rain and if there's any opportunity for that in the next couple of weeks or more of a change sometime in the future.
Well, there's always an opportunity for rain. So you can never just say, look, it's not going to rain. But in this particular situation, there are a number of very strong hints that there's not very much rain coming up. And there's a couple of reasons why. The number one reason is that a large upper-level high has formed across the corn belt. And because of that, it's going to block all kinds of weather systems from moving through. Now, there will be a few storms across the northwest third of the growing belt over the next couple of days. And there might even be a few storms in those far southern areas that need rain the most about a week to 8 days from now when a cool front passes. But that upper-level high is basically the driver of weather going forward. And the big concern here is that we know that from a climatological standpoint, that it's pretty much typical to receive little to no rain for 4 consecutive months across the northern half of the Corn Belt starting in the middle of May. And what we're talking about to this point is the first half of May. So in the first half of May, you can still receive some rain. But once you get to the middle of May, you should not expect much more. The states of Goiás and Mato Grosso, which are essentially like combining Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas together into one, they only average one-third of an inch of rain over the 30-day period that starts on May 16th. That's it, one-third of an inch total. And that pretty much continues right on into September and October. They just have a dry season, and that's part of their climate. So you need to get the rains now because you kind of know what's going to happen once you get later into May. And in fact, going back 41 years, only three times did that region have more than 1 inch of rain in 41 years, starting in the middle of May. And none of them had more than 2 inches of rain. So there's just not much rain coming up. And it'll be a challenge to quantify exactly what's happening there, because some of those northern growing areas, the northern half of corn, did receive rains here and there, especially in Mato Grosso, which is the number one corn-producing state. But as you move to the south, into that southern half of the Corn Belt, well, this area does not experience distinct wet and dry seasons. Their climate is a little more typical to what you would have in the United States, except it doesn't snow there. But they do receive rains pretty much year-round, and you can kind of count on them. Now, on occasion, they get a drought where it just doesn't rain. And that's what's happening in that southern area. They're just receiving a drought for whatever reason, and it's not raining very much. Now, there's very little rain in the forecast over the next week. Once we get later into next week, yes, there might be a few thunderstorms, but the chances are pretty low just because of that large upper level high to the north. Now, to take it one step further, we can look at the Global Ensemble Forecast System model, and this is essentially the average of the GFS model, which is one of the primary things that meteorologists look at to forecast the weather. Not the only thing, but one of the primary ones. And if you run the GFS model basically 30 different ways, you come up with the ensemble average, which is the average of all 30 different ways this model is run. After doing that, we end up seeing that the average of these models show that 95% of expected second crop corn production in Brazil should receive less than one quarter of its normal rainfall over the next 2 weeks. And remember, after that, we know there's not going to be much rain for at least the northern half because that's a dry season. So this is a big problem. And it'll remain to be seen just how much of a problem it is. But I don't see things like this too often. And this certainly looks like one of the bigger deals we've had in a long time in agriculture.
I'm going to summarize this in maybe a short sentence that you might think is too short. But it appears to me that year in and year out, part of Brazil plants a corn crop expecting the second half of the season after pollination to be a drought. And this year, they have a drought in front of that.
I would say that's mostly accurate, but not quite. Normally, they would plant much earlier so that when the drought hit, because they know it's coming, it doesn't matter anymore. If the drought hits on August 20th or August 30th, it doesn't really matter. But because that soybean crop was planted so late, way back in October, November, and December, the soybean crop got harvested late, and then the corn crop got planted essentially 3 weeks later than normal. So now you already were pushing into the dry season just because you planted it 3 weeks late, and then the dry season hit earlier than normal, and now you're all being affected by it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great conversation today.
I agree, and thanks so much, Mike. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago and helped us to wrap up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. This afternoon, we'll record our Commodity Week program with Ellen Dearden, Aaron Curtis, Mike Zuzlow, and Glenn Ring. You can hear that this evening by about 6 o'clock up on the website on many of these stations over the weekend and right here on our home station on Friday afternoons, just after the Closing Market Report. However you listen to our ag programming, thank you so much for being with us today here at Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.